Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm your host, Ron Edwards, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. This is the Ron and Don program. My associate, Mr. Allen, will not be with us this evening. He's been called away on business. And of course, it is politically hot out here, if you know what I mean. And so sometimes people kind of take a little bit of time off, a tour, if you will, kind of try to get away from it, you know, maybe even go down to Mar-a-Lago, if you will, down there in Florida. It's really not funny when you talk in terms of the psyche, if you will, the mindset, the comfort level of the United States of America and others who are close allies of the United States, and particularly those that, well, just think, it was a couple months ago, November 8th, 2016, Americans were saying a new day was here, the monkey was out of the White House, if you will, America was back to what it used to be, whatever that's supposed to mean, a white America is a better America, you know, a white America is a great America. Now people are kind of singing different tunes, if you will. But tonight, here from our studio headquarters, we're going to take a look at what is a terrible, terrible disaster, if you will. The United States, the Trump administration, has already lost its national security advisor. What did he last, 24 days? Headlines in every major American paper and little towns and townships and etc., county newspapers and et cetera, all saying, if you will, General Flynn is gone. General Flynn has resigned. Earlier today, the press secretary for the White House, I would feel sorry for the individual, but I think he thought that he was taking on a responsibility that was going to make him a big man. That happens with people who have the Napoleonic complexes. But what is basically being said, we can't quite get a total fix. We've been watching all day. We've been in communication with our sources both in and outside of the United States. You don't know if General Flynn, Mike Flynn there, was fired. He was asked to submit his resignation, which quickly was accepted by President Trump. I know that Vice President Pence is glad to see him go. He certainly made a fool out of President, if you will. New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, and others saying, can you believe this, my friend, that for at least 15 days before the story broke, that President Trump had known that that his national security advisor had misled the Vice President of the United States, if you will, and had lied to other important entities. He certainly caused the vice president to go before national media. Remember that Sunday when Vice President Pence was on every talk show on Sunday morning, talking in terms that there was no quote-unquote treachery, if you will. There was no violation of the constitutional concept of one president at a time in the republic. And that General Flynn, if you will, the National Security Advisor designee, had done nothing wrong, if you will, with all this wild talk. Remember, this was back around the 28th, 29th of December in the year of our Lord, 2016, if you will. And any suggestion that the colored president, some way or another, had been disrespected, the Constitution had been violated, except for a bunch of hogwash, if you will. They hadn't quite identified the new identification tag, and that is the lying press, if you will, and such things as that. But clearly, during that particular period of time, basically from the 27th of December until around the 5th, 6th of January, it was being said that there had been no quote-unquote compromise and no deals had been cut. If you remember, the president, the constitutional president had ordered that 36 Soviet citizens, diplomats, spies, and et cetera, leave the country immediately. Normally, you give them 36 hours to get out. And 36 individuals got on the Russian aircraft and flew back home to Mother Russia, if you will. Everyone was talking in terms of being knowledgeable and that this would be a tit for tat, if you will, and that the Moscow would expel a like number of American diplomats, spies, and et cetera. That's really what Donald Trump was talking about in his interview with O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly, a couple of weeks ago or less, when he talked in terms of, you know, the United States is involved in provocations and violent acts and bad things and et cetera. People just assumed that was going to happen, and lo and behold, Vladimir Putin, the strong man, if you will, a man who is now controlling two world capitals, Moscow and the newly identified by this commentator, the Western Kremlin, if you will, there in Washington, D.C., formerly known as the White House. That is now the Western Kremlin, if you will, and President Donald Trump is acting like the new Western commissar, if you will. For those of you who do not understand what commissar means, you know, go to your computer, type it up, and there it is. We've been talking for about 7 weeks that there's big trouble, if you will. Deals have been cut. Here's what will tear the country apart is there is a offering of proof that a number of Russian sleepers, quote unquote, have now emerged, have come from under their cupboards and closets and et cetera, and are really now in co-control of the United States of America. I know people don't like to hear that. I know that bothers them and et cetera. I thought we had a real good conversation last week. Our associate, Mr. Allen, had rejoined us briefly for last week's program. We had some real tough calls coming in. And some real tough questions, very, I thought, stimulating dialogue took place with regards to the American people being betrayed, if you will. Do and can we know what to expect with regards to the Trump administration? In fact, Tuesday night here in the United States of America, for the first time we heard references to treason. I mean, I have heard references to treason in the American government since Benedict Arnold, back to the time of George Washington. You remember George Washington? You know, I threw a apple or something across the Delaware or whatever. And we definitely have not seen a level of significant compatibility of treachery, treason, and et cetera since the end of the Civil War in 1865. You know, folks don't want to talk about that kind of situation because you have so many. You know, when I look at Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the majority leader of the United States Senate, and I listen to him, you know, wax. I mean, he boy really waxes and et cetera. But I think in terms that his great-grandpappy, if you will, his grandmammy and granduncles and et cetera were all traitors to the United States. They were all a part of the uprising by white terrorists in places like Kentucky, Alabama, Virginia, you know, Georgia, the Carolinas, if you will, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, if you will, and all a part of the group of Americans who led this country into a civil war over the issue of keeping people enslaved, if you will. And I look at these gentlemen, and, you know, actually I saw it quite a bit in the confirmation hearings. You know, I saw a lot of individuals with that Southern swag, if you will, that Southern drawl, if you will, and et cetera. And I always have found it amazing how this country has stayed away from talking in terms of the history of treason, if you will, treachery, betrayal in the South, and how many of these people that, you know, once again lead this nation they only, by the way, the traitors, those of the Confederacy, if you will, only were punished for a very short period of time. And in fact, by 1885, 1886, about 20 years after the end of the Civil War, they were back in business, and they knew what to do, if you will. They made the newly freed slaves the problem of America, if you will. And in fact, he used to have the same kind of debates back in the Congress of the United States in the 1980s, 90s, and then by 1901, they had run all the black folk out of the House of Representatives and the United States Senate and the Supreme. In fact, didn't get back there until about 1927. You know, we were always punished for the treachery, the misrepresentation, and the lies of the United States, if you will. Woodrow Wilson was an extremely apt individual at doing that. The gentleman from Virginia, the man who actually, once he became president, 1914, segregated the city of Washington, if you will. Again, people who don't really study their history don't know about that. In fact, I heard a black historian on a radio program here in our beloved Twin Cities Sunday on Urban Contemporary Station. And this historian, gentleman that used to be in one of our more prestigious small elite colleges, McAllister, was reminding the listening audience about where the term white really came from. And he was absolutely on point. I have known him for many, many years. When he first came here from Cleveland, Ohio, we were already enunciating, if you will, and expressing these variety of reflections about how history is always being changed. But the occupier are those who are, quote unquote, in control, if you will, can redesign, if you will, reconfigure history to their liking. That's the reason that so many of our young people in Black America have no sense of pride with the accomplishments of the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. It is so sad. And I noticed that early on, right after the election of Donald Trump, and just a tad before the inauguration on 20 January 2017, that there was already this decision that everything that wasn't going to work was going to be blamed on Barack Obama, if you will, the 44th president of the United States of America. It's not working out like that right now, because you see, when General Flynn was involved in that conversation, I don't know what he was thinking about. It had to be arrogance, my friends. And it's really too bad tonight our phone lines aren't open. I think Mr. Allen said he'll be back with us next week. But I don't know what General Flynn could have been thinking about to have that kind of discussion. See, I mean, it was not an open mic or open phone or et cetera. But the problem is, as we said on our television program, which airs every Sunday here in the Twin Cities and then after St. Paul on Channel 17, MTN, Minneapolis Television Network, is that people should pay a little bit more attention to who's listening in. And in fact, on our radio, on our television program, and now on this national and worldwide radio program, we are indicating there are a number of nations that were listening in to conversations back around that period of 27th, 28th, 29th of December, led by the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, India, if you will, Iran, and actually also these are two additional countries that you will not hear anything about because it's so embarrassing, both Sweden, who has an excellent electronic interceptor, and Brazil. And let me back up and talk in terms of why Brazil, who has, you know, significant wealth in a sector and is a very, very large country and has been attempting to make sure it gets itself on the world scene. It certainly has been a power in South America. I mean, we all know that. But the Brazilians got ticked off when in early 2015, as early 2015, the our Brazilian intelligence service began to realize that American corporations and others were bad-mouthing and misrepresenting what was going on as Brazil prepared for the 2016 Olympic Games. And we watched very closely the network that we have, if you will, of operatives and associates. And one of the sources that is utilized at this end, if you will, is an asset that we have in place in a place called Dubai. And one of the things that I've learned over the last decade or so is that everybody that has the ability to eavesdrop, to spy, and et cetera, every opportunity they get, they do it, and particularly if the United States is a target, if you will. And so I just don't know what, but also transmissions, quote-unquote, going to Yemen, if you will, Africa, and et cetera. Certainly transmissions coming from the United States, coming from England, France, Brazil, if you will, Canada, and et cetera. Take a look, triangle. This is one of the things that they tell you when you're talking about eavesdropping. Triangle. United Emirates, if you will, but it is Dubai that has become a significant source of information and detailed reflections about intercepts. And so one of the things that we became aware of as a journalist very, very, very early on in the process is that there was too much chatter going on. And even though in some cases, in the case of General Flynn, who should have really known better, that some of the cryptic codes had already been broken, if you will. I mean, that's why the Russians, the United States, the Japanese, the Chinese, everybody have all these hackers and et cetera, brilliant young minds, male, female, irrespective of race, creed, color, national origin, tremendous capabilities to know how to go in the triangle, if you will, and to break newly developed codes and et cetera. And so in early 2015, we started hearing a very interesting narrative. And on this program, sometimes with our co-host Don Allen, we would kind of send out a signal that there was certain information that was being made known to us that began to make sense. But it was kind of scary because you kind of wondered how in the heck anybody was going to pull off anything that talked in terms of tampering, again, tampering, with the election of the United States of America in 2016. Now, this was back in early 2015 and et cetera. Well, working closely with assets, if you will, we began to hear some disturbing news. Now, we remembered a situation that happened in Ohio during the election of 2008. A large number of illegals, if you will, started showing up in Ohio, but primarily not in the urban. See, the folks always think that people of color should be situated in urban areas. Now, these Latino Hispanics from everywhere, from Costa Rica to Honduras to Guatemala, if you will, to El Salvador, et cetera, Mexico, were being put in what were called station houses, if you will, in rural Ohio. And so what happened was you had a much larger number of votes in Ohio than you had registered voters. But Barack Obama was on a roll, and they were not able to knock him out of the box. And 4 years later, when there was still that discussion. But the Russians are coming, for those that remember the movie. The Russians had begun to put into play their sleepers, some who had been here in the United States all of their natural lives, if you will, some who, quote-unquote, had been brought here as children, babies, and et cetera. But the most dangerous group were those Russian sleepers that were put into this country, if you will, coming out of the 1930s and through the Second World War, and et cetera. And so what started happening is discussions that should have never happened, or if they did, the American intelligence services, that's the term we use so we don't confuse people, should have been able to be alerted. In fact, I'll tell you how far back this goes. We do a little history tonight here, talking in terms of America unsafe. That would be the theme. Is that actually a guy by the name of Joe McCarthy, if you will, a guy out of Wisconsin, same place that Speaker Ryan is from, though Joe McCarthy, a Republican, represented the entire state of Wisconsin. Joe McCarthy was one radical, fanatical, I hate the commie better dead than red and such things as that. And Joe McCarthy, in the very late 1940s and early 50s, really tore this country apart through an entity called the Un-American Activities Committee, which originally was put into place about 1937-38 in the Congress of the United States, if you will, to deal with the Red Surge, if you will, and scourge and et cetera. It was a surge because communism had caught on more than people had suspected as we were trying to come out of the Depression. In fact, we really didn't come out of the Depression until the beginning of the Second World War. You know, that's why December 7th, 1941 is not what some people say that it was, a sneak attack and et cetera. But that's a whole nother volume and volume and volume of history books and et cetera. By the way, we send our continued condolences to Nishi, Japanese Americans who were stripped of their constitutional rights, their citizenship, and et cetera. You know, we hear people talk about what's happening with the immigration and the walls and et cetera. I mean, folks talk like it's the first time that, quote unquote, people of color have had their rights stripped from them. And in the case of the Japanese Americans, the Nishi, many of them were born into this country. In fact, there was just an obituary in the major newspaper here yesterday of a very beloved Japanese woman who came to the United States when she was about 6 or 7. The conflict started. She and her family were uprooted from their small farm in Southern California. Her father, Japanese, born in Japan, grew grapes and et cetera. That land taken from them, they were never really compensated. They were relocated to Arizona, if you will, where she stayed for the duration, if you will, and then in some way or another by 1947, 48, had relocated here to Minnesota. In fact, though, many Japanese who relocated here to Minnesota themselves were not totally aware that there were internment camps here in Minnesota. Japanese were being brought from the West Coast and et cetera. We always remind our friends and the international audience and et cetera, the martial law administrator, if you will, was a man later to become Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, the late Earl Warren. Yes, Earl Warren was the martial law administrator. Oh, man, they did it. We did it, if you will, if one is simple enough to make that kind of statement, in this country, in this nation, with regards to what they did to the Japanese, if you will. And also there would be other people of, you know, Asian origin, if you will, who got caught up because what the racists used to say back in 1942, because the roundup started within weeks after the attack on Pearl Harbor, is that they're all yellow, and they all look alike, if you will. Really always remind ourselves that don't be fooled by this rhetoric about constitutional protection, that you folks are protected and et cetera. I mean, we have to remember that we're just, you know, 150 years removed from just having the shackles unloosened, not taken off, but unloosened, if you will. In fact, we're still waiting for that mule and 40 acres. And this would be a good time, and it is a good time to talk about that, because this is Black History Month, if you will, allegedly our time. We allegedly get 2 months, January and February. In fact, for those of us that are a part of the Black Vanguard that came out of the 1960s, every day, every hour, every minute, every second is part of the right of the African-American to talk in terms of our lineage, our legacy, our presence, our history here in the United States of America. We should never allow anyone to dictate to us. The reason that I also say that is some of the discussions that are taking place. We have said on this program for the last couple of weeks and have warned the African-American community, be prepared to be the next target. And it will start in Chicago, if you will. We've said for the last 3 or 4 weeks that Chicago is the epic center. The decision is being made. Mr. Bannon, who, by the way, Mr. Bannon ran into a problem over the last couple of hours in police reports that have shown up with regards to abuse, beating his wife back in 1996, if you will, Rachel Meadows and others, now reporting it. Now, the matter is everybody had that information, if you will. In fact, there were certain entities that made sure that that information was forwarded and et cetera. Someone went in like they were supposed to, shook the tree and looked up, and Mr. Bannon, who is special advisor to our imperial president, whipped up on his wife. I mean, there's a police reports and et cetera out there from the little city out there in California, just outside of Los Angeles, if you will. I mean, and he, you know, Steve Bannon knew how to whip a woman. He whipped her. He whipped his wife real good. Way back in 1996, Rachel Meadows is talking about it right now. We are looking at monitors here in studio. She's talking about it right now. In fact, Rachel Meadows is wearing it out, man. And the reason this comes is that, oops, Donald Trump lost a nominee for his cabinet, the guy that he had brought in, who was as anti-labor as anti-labor could be, as his labor secretary, got washed out today. And, in fact, did as General Flynn did, stepped out, stepped away, got away. His wife told on him. In fact, it was interesting. I remember some footage of that particular show has been circulated, if you will. Paulson's wife went on the Oprah Winfrey show back in 1990, if you will, and talked in terms of how she was an abused wife and how her husband used to beat her, et cetera, the same man that Donald Trump had nominated to be Secretary of Labor for the United States of America. Anyways, this was also an individual that had foreign help, little nannies and things like that. He wasn't paying what he should have paid. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to do, and et cetera. Somebody caught him about 3 weeks ago, and he ran out with his hair on fire, saying that he had now paid what he was supposed to be paying for this Latino, quote-unquote, worker who was illegal, if you will. Had no business in the United States, but at the same time was being used and abused by this gentleman who had just been named as the president's choice for Secretary of Labor. Well, he dropped out today. So now the president's got to go find a new nominee for the position of Secretary of Labor. He's got to get his ducks in a row for his Supreme Court nominee, if you will. And most importantly, particularly with the Russians, doing all kinds of things. And we're going to touch on that in the next number of minutes, the new military positioning that the Russians are involved in. We already know what the North Koreans and everything doing. The little guy in North Korea clearly sent a message to Donald Trump that he is not impressed by the Donald, if you will, and that this is not the Apprentice TV program. This is for real. And then sent a ballistic missile down the chute, as we like to say, from North Korea, past Japan and into the sea of Japan. But anyways, going back to these appointments, if you will, these selections that don't seem to be working. In fact, at one point they were talking in terms that they may have to call on President Pence, Vice President, I'm sorry, oops, fraudulent slip. there hasn't been any move to impeach yet, to break the tie. And everybody's talking about in modern times, first time that the vice president has had to break the tie in the Senate for a nominee of the administration in power, if you will. And I'm not surprised that there has not been a couple more. And by the way, just for African-American listeners and et cetera, the Republicans are really ticked, in particular the right wing. And by the way, a shout out to our homeboys up there, the neo-Nazis up in Spirit Lake, Idaho there, just outside of Sandpoint, if you will, the proving grounds. And you know, when I talk about proving grounds, I'm talking as if I'm talking about Aberdeen proving grounds, if you will. It's where Billy Bob is doing his training, man. He's getting ready. He will be unleashed in a very short period of time because the president has to begin to set the tone for domestic terror. No one's paying any attention. Well, yes, they are. Yeah, we of the advance guard, if you will, the urban rangers are paying attention because it is more dangerous out here than you can ever believe. But there's begun to be some cracks in what has been a long, long-held tradition. It, basically, other than period of Civil War in America where people like Robert E. Lee and others broke Stonewall Jackson and others broke their oath made on the plains of West Point and et cetera, and turned their backs on their Native America and became terrorists, if you will, using the name Confederacy and et cetera. We've basically had excellent discipline as it pertains to those who are part of the officer corps, if you will, going back, starting with West Point, and then the Naval Academy, if you will, and then later in modern times, the Air Force Academy and the Coast Guard Academy and et cetera, et cetera. The general who heads up America's Special Forces Operation, very dangerous group, by the way. Those are normally the individuals that you send in. They were the group, as an example, that were a part of the attack in Yemen, which turned out not to be as successful as everybody was being told, if you will. In fact, it's interesting that because of the resignation of General Flynn, once again in America, there has been a lessening, if you will, of discussion about what happened in Yemen and those civilians that were killed. An American SEAL from the famous so-called Team 6 lost his life. A $70 million piece of equipment, if you will, was lost. Nobody but the taxpayers will take care of that. Yes, that helicopter, quote-unquote, transport $70 million, actually blown up. And I cannot understand why our Special Forces troops that were engaged in that fierce firefight in southern Yemen, why they didn't have plastique with them and do like those special SEALs did in northern Pakistan when they took out Osama bin Laden. All they had to do was put, you know, the pack of, you know, C4, put a detonator in there and blow the helicopter up. But in order to rationalize all of the civilians, including children, babies, including the 8-year-old daughter of the man known as Al-Awlaki, in order to justify all the civilians that were killed, they had to indicate that an airstrike was called in, had to be called in the dead of night. And, of course, that airstrike hit a number of targets and killed a lot of civilians. Now, the United States said that they killed 14 Al-Qaeda fighters, if you will. Only problem is Reuters, the wire service that actually comes to you from Germany, went with a story 10 days ago that indicated that one of the people killed was a very popular local tribal chief, a sheikh, who everyone knew was not involved and affiliated with Al-Qaeda, never had been a supporter of Al-Qaeda, and had strong enough forces that they left him alone. But interesting enough, he was killed, if you will, and what one of the tribal leaders said in an article in the New York Times, republished in a number of local newspapers, was that what has happened in that particular province, Abak province, if you will, excuse the stretch there is that every Yemen is looking to kill an American, if you will. But I found it interesting because we were going to, as the American people, and particularly the American taxpayers, because you have a $70 million piece of property that was lost, destroyed on the ground, is that there was tremendous intelligence data that was retrieved, if you will, and that data was going to be used to identify Al-Qaeda operations on the peninsula, if you will, and in the immediate vicinity and possibly attempted attacks in the United States. Now, by the way, the government's, you know, special domestic intelligence units are basically saying, even with all of this chaos inside of the White House, that the domestic terror program is going to have to get on the move, if you will, in order for the president to be able to direct the attorneys at the Department of Justice to put together the necessary briefs to present to the appellate court, but ultimately to the Supreme Court, indicating that the Trump administration is on the right constitutional trail, if you will, with regards to immigration, if you will, the wall, if you will, and the deportation of those who are no longer desirable in the United States of America. In fact, a lot of conversation in the last 24 hours about the so-called first dreamer, 24-year-old Mexican by the name of Romaris, spelled with a Z, apprehended outside of Seattle, Washington. Actually, ICE came to get his father. Now, you know that ICE, the Immigration Naturalization Service, you know they already knew that the 24-year-old son was, quote-unquote, not properly documented, if you will. Now, that takes us also back to General Flynn. Now, General Flynn, going back, let's see how many of you have been taking notes and using and recording. Now, General Flynn initially said that he couldn't even remember the kind of conversation he had with the Russian ambassador to the United States, who happened to be in Moscow, of course, obviously being briefed and rebriefed and also there to enjoy the Christmas festivities. Now, General Flynn maintained that he initiated the call to the Russian ambassador to wish him, I guess, the Russian Politburo, and particularly Vladimir Putin, a Merry Christmas. Of course, it was a couple days after Christmas, as we know it in the United States, if you will. But, you know, who argues with, quote unquote, a Christian holiday? I mean, you know, he called the ambassador. Now, initially, we reported this activity. We also reported on this program at the same time, early first week in January, that General Flynn had been on some kind of flight and had made a quick a trip to the Soviet Union sometime early in the first week of December, of a little over or less a month after the election of Donald Trump on the 8th day of November 2016. We repeat that again on this program, and of course all of our programs are on demand, so you know, you find the date, you go back, you can listen to it. And we had picked up information and intel, if you will, from English language broadcasts coming out of China, if you will, and Iran, that an American official of very high rank was visiting in the Soviet Union, if you will. Now, this was approximately 3 weeks before the telephone call to indicate to the Russian ambassador to the United States, who had been recalled to Moscow to prepare for the relationship with, still at that time, President-elect Donald Trump, on how that situation would be handled, if you will. But the real purpose of the call, according to the Intercept, let me tell you where the Intercept came from. We enunciated it at the beginning of this program. We enunciated again, and we stand by it. Intercepts were made by the Russian Federated Republic, by the Republic of China, by the People's Republic of North Korea, by the government of India, by the government of Iran, particularly under the direct control of the Revolutionary Guard, if you will, and the governments of both Sweden and Brazil. And, you know, we explained to you the situation with Brazil because Brazil had began to assert itself because of the kind of undermining that was going on that was affecting the Brazilian tourist industry, but more importantly, the economic structure of Brazil as they prepared for the Rio Games. The Brazilians had put a lot of their capital, their money, and et cetera, into making these two good games. By the way, it was always interesting that the only folks that generated any controversy as it pertains to the Rio Games were a bunch of white American swimmers who told all kinds of lies about being robbed, stuck up, and et cetera. You know, we don't talk about that anymore. You know what I'm saying? But that was the reason for the Brazilians. But see, people have never paid any attention that Sweden, who has always since the, even before the First World War, have always played a very smooth game along with the Swiss, of staying neutral, if you will. It was amazing the ability of Sweden during the Second World War with all of that terror, even the occupation on both sides, the Germans in Norway, the Russians in Finland, that Sweden, you know, the land of Gustav, if you will, was able to stay clean, if you will, properly sanitized and et cetera, and in fact joined with De Gaulle in Spain. And being the kind of sites that were needed, they had to be in existence so that the overlords of intelligence gathering, espionage, and et cetera, I refer to those of you who are movie buffs to the movie Casablanca, if you will. Except Casablanca was more of an accurate analysis and an analogy to how things really work. But Sweden had always been a country that knew how to stay on the best sides of all parties. Sweden has a excellent electronic industry and et cetera, and Sweden had actually been working for a long time on their capabilities because they always wanted to keep an eye on the Russians. They actually technically almost have a common border with Russia, if you will. And certainly they are one of the great banking sites in the free world, if you will, Stockholm being a economic hustle and bustle, if you will, right there with Lisbon and Lisbon, if you will, and London, if you will, and of course New York City and et cetera. So that was part of those two countries that no one will ever mention because they were actually the source of some of the information, maybe the source of some of the leaks. Again, Brazil and Sweden. Now, when you talk in terms of the real big boys that everyone tries to concentrate on, no one talks as much about India. But you see, India has had some ongoing conflict both with Pakistan. In fact, there were some 5 weeks ago that some work had to be done as there was some tensions raised in the continued fight over Kashmir. And people tend to think that only Pakistan and India have interest in Kashmir. We have to remind you that China, which has a natural and common border with the quote-unquote province of Kashmir, like to tinker every once in a while, like to do some things. The Chinese have been a strong supporter of Pakistan by and large. In fact, way back in the 1950s, 60s, there were a couple of conflicts between China and India. In fact, it's one of the reasons that India went to and rushed to become a nuclear power and get her some nuclear bombs and et cetera. And the Chinese and India have always kept a weary eye at each other. And, of course, everyone allegedly knows the history of Pakistan and, quote-unquote, India. Now, of course, China has her, you know, concerns and interests with her neighbor there on her northeastern border, country of North Korea, who has what? What do the North Koreans have? The second, third largest standing army in the world? But the North Koreans also have nuclear capabilities, irrespective of how far the United States says that their missiles can go and et cetera. The North Koreans have never been intimidated by Western powers. In fact, there is only a truce in North and South Korea, if you will. The United States and the United Nations are still looking to try to defeat the North Koreans and the Chinese. And sometimes people get away and let history get away from them. You know, maybe what folks need to do to understand some of the conflict that's going on now inside of the Trump White House is to go back, take a look at some of the missteps in the so-called Korean conflict. You know, if Douglas MacArthur would have had his way, they would have dropped nuclear bombs on China. Only problem was Russia wasn't going to let that happen. And think about this, my friend. Russia said, nah, we can't let that happen. And by that time, the United States realized that the Russians had developed nuclear perfection, if you will, basically by using American scientists who betrayed the United States of America and passed the nuclear secrets to the Soviet Union of Joseph Stalin, if you will. So when Russia said, nah, we can't let you, the United States, bomb our neighbor to the south, China, to the environmental climate that Russia is so dependent on, as well as the fact that China is now a significant member. This was all in 1949, when Douglas MacArthur, that's when Dwight Eisenhower said, my God, the man should have kept him in the Far East, lost his mind. But that did not happen, the nuclear bombing of China. But see, China has never forgotten the fact that the United States of America, a Christian nation, if you will, was prepared to kill 400,000 to 500,000 Chinese little yellow people. Now, you got to remember, for those of you that are still old enough to remember, if you will, if not, go back and look at your history books, your documents, manifestos. And something we, again, don't talk about because we're too cowardly. See, since 1945, when two hydrogen bombs or atomic bombs, as they like to say, were dropped on Japan, a nuclear weapon has never been used against a white Christian nation. In fact, never will. In fact, it was one of the common threads, notice we said threads, that joined the United States and the Soviet Union together in everything from detente to whatever else that you wanted to call it, that the white Christian race had to be preserved. And if these two great powers, though there were now at least four nuclear powers involved, England had certainly been given nuclear capabilities, the French were not far behind, Israel was not to come for another 10 or 12 years. But the rationale always was that it was all right to nuke the little people of color, if you will. And so there has always been, philosophically, though generations of Chinese leadership have come and gone, if you will, to the other side. When I say the other side of the Blessed River, who all talk about that there is this danger in the Western world. They have a propensity, we in the West, and not African Americans, even though for 8 years a very good man by the name of Barack Obama was in power. But we have never had that propensity for killing people of color in massive numbers, if you will, though there are other ways to approach it, such as Tuskegee, the syphilis experiments, and et cetera, other kinds of medical experiments. We again refer you to the book, Medical Apartheid, if you will. Excellent book, which we have in our own personal libraries, and we have associates around the country and the world that that keep a discussion going, if you will, about the fragileness of nations of color facing the raft of those who have the nuclear power. And I have to tell you that in many regards, the presence of China, even India, Pakistan, if you will, North Korea, has balanced off what some of the so-called white Christian nations, United States, England, France, if you will, Russia, if you will, would contemplate or certain factions. And let me say it like this. I mean, we need to be real tonight on this program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's what the president's special advisor, Mr. Bannon, what he has talked about for a number of years, other than when he wasn't beating up on his wife, if you will, knocking her brains out. Again, we refer you to Rachel Meadows tonight on MSNBC. They're breaking the story. I mean, you know, gook and gurish is falling out all over the place. But this issue of the disregard for people of color and their lives in massive numbers is real. We, the African-American persuasion in the United States of America, clearly know and understand that we are considered, even by the most angelic of Caucasians, to be nothing more than property, if you will. And, of course, if you are considered to be property, then you are considered to be most expendable, if you will. But we have not seen in a long time the kind of discussion that we did see for a period of time in the early 1960s as the uprisings and the revolution, black anger and et cetera, swept across this country for a period of time until a number of strategies were initiated and et cetera, and not the least of them, drugs, if you will, the proliferation of drugs into the African-American community. That is one of the reasons that Representative Maxine Waters of California will always be loved and respected by those of us, quote-unquote, the urban rangers, because she called it in 1985. She talked in terms of what this drug called crack, cocaine, and et cetera, was really doing to the African-American communities, particularly in South Central L.A. And et cetera. But it swept all across the country. It is now in every major urban center, in every hamlet, and et cetera. And we repeat again what we've said already twice on this program tonight, that the domestic strategy that is being planned as we move in to the remainder of tonight's program is to begin to talk about the gang problem and the abnormality, if you will, of the colored race, of the Negro, if you will. See, there are a number of studies that unfortunately have already been done over the last 20 years, which basically indicates that there are actually discussions that go on in the United States at the highest level. They had to curtail in some degree with the black man in the White House for the last 8 years. But in institutions that are as white as the driven snow on a Montana plain, if you know what I mean, you know, sweeping her out of the Rockies and et cetera, that the sons and daughters of the African are expendable and that there is no real purpose other than for the purposes of entertainment, as if we are part of the Roman or Greek games of a long time past, that other than to be entertained, to, you know, hit a ball, throw a ball, shoot a basketball, run a track meet, if you will, play a little tennis, if you will. Did you hear about the one of the white commentator of ESPN who was fired in the middle of the Australian Open as a commentator when he referred to the beloved Serena Williams as a gorilla? Yes, he did. Yes, that white man did. That white man got so ticked off as she was wearing out her little petite white opponent that he started using the term that she was gorillaing the ball. She was gorillaing the ball and she was playing like a gorilla. Yes, this white man did. Yes, he did. It's an article, small article in ESPN in the major papers today. It referred to Serena Williams as a gorilla. But see, I remember when some of these same people that are complaining as we speak tonight are complaining about how President Trump and General Flynn and General Flynn's son, by the way, General Flynn's son has much more of a criminal role in what has happened than anybody is talking about at this particular hour. We repeat that again for the purpose of historical continuity. General Flynn's son, really need to take a look at him because he's right there with Bart Wright and particularly with Bannon. And Bannon is so angry right now that he is already talking to his elements and regiments and et cetera to prepare for the holy war against the black savages and et cetera. And so when you see a sports commentator on ESPN get so carried away in the heat, and it was hot. It's hot. It's summertime down in Australia, for those of you that pay attention. And so it was hot and et cetera, though he was sitting in a cool, air-conditioned booth and et cetera. But he became so livid that this beautiful African-American woman, who is already designated for the Hall of Fame, was nothing more than a gorilla. Well, we're getting ready. We're wrapping tonight. We appreciate the opportunity to come to you to lay out certain narratives, if you will. You've not heard the end of it, and it is an America that is shaken by what has happened. If Humpty Dumpty can be put together again after falling off the wall, I'm talking about President Trump, only he and time and, well, I guess God will know. But let us never be referred to. We in Black America is that race, a group of people that are referred to now as those who are extinct because we didn't pay any attention to the dark cloud that is descending down upon us. Once again, Chicago is the epic center. It will be the beginning of the battle as it pertains to the domestic agenda. And we in Black America are it. God bless you, Black America. Love and good night.